Yeah, we're on a Skype call. We don't use Zoom. All right.
Hey, Brian, who's the owner of the Dallas Mavericks?
I believe it is Cuban, Mark. All right. What up, everybody?
It's welcome back.
Ya boys.
It's ya boys. This is the Neat Beans and Collard Greens podcast, episode 5.
Cinq, oui.
Episode 5. This is pretty great. Kind of cool to think about. We've been doing this for over 2 months now.
Yeah.
Wow. Kind of cool, man. I like the schedule we're doing, this whole every 2 week thing. You know, it's not a full-time job yet. You know, maybe one day we'll both quit our full-time jobs and start doing this podcast every day. You never know. All right. So we have another guest on today. Good friend of mine, met him at one of like 70 drum corps auditions that we saw each other at. Short intro. We auditioned at the same drum corps, I want to say in like 2015 or something like that.
I think that's when it was.
Yeah. And then neither of us made that drum corps. And I went and marched another drum corps, and he, a year or two later, started marching the Boston Crusaders. He is another percussionist. Sorry, Brian.
I believe it's the Boston Area Crusaders.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, get right, man.
Got dude.
Sorry.
You better come correct when you come in this house.
This is Kelly Murray. What's up, Kelly?
What's up, dog?
And now, Kelly, you and I have known each other since elementary school, correct?
Yeah, like 2 months ago when we played Xbox one time together with David.
Yeah. Elementary school. Because, you know, yep, I'm always getting schooled on Xbox. All right.
That was a good one.
Kids, I think it's funny that, class,
you know, almost every, except 2 weeks ago when we interviewed Richard, everybody has used their Xbox headset to do this podcast.
Dude, it's like the best one I own.
Yeah, that's true. No, I think so.
It's good. Rashad. Brian's is a $30 headset that he got like 7 years ago.
Five. Calm down.
Five. Pretty close.
But it still works.
It still works. You're right.
All right.
So we're going to do a couple of things today. We're going to ask Kelly some questions about his life. He's going to tell us some cool stuff that he's interested in.
About his life.
What he does. About his life. Yeah. some things he's interested in, things he does now. Some cool stuff going on. Whatever. We're just going to keep it pretty chill today. So, Kelly, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I just aged out of drum corps last summer with the Boston Crusaders, where I served as the bass drum section leader. And I currently am on my,
14?
I think it's eighth year at VIP, where I serve as the, ensemble captain and, do all things, you know, a member should do behind the scenes. And I currently work, as of August 2019, I started working at, Dynasty, where I am, working in drum manufacturing, and all that good stuff. We go to like PASIC, TMEA, I do like a couple trade shows a year with them. But man, it was a pretty steep learning curve, to start there, but it's pretty interesting. It's, like, not anything that anybody else I know really does. So it's kind of cool to have a different take on the whole activity from a manufacturing standpoint. I think it's pretty unique.
That's awesome. Now, you know, we're gonna ask you random questions, and Brian's is gonna have different ones than me, because I told him that you worked at Dynasty, and he was like, dude, I've always wanted to know how drums work and how they're made and stuff. So feel free to answer whatever you can. Obviously, if there's something we ask that you can't answer, just be like, I can't really tell you that. That's totally fine. Sure. I completely understand that. So, what year did you start at VIP?
2014.
And what show was that?
That was the Ride the Lightning show. It was pretty brutal. We'd like electrocuted that dude in a chair in the middle of the floor in the closer. It was
I remember that show.
It was pretty wild.
I think that was the first or second time I was at WGI and I saw it and I was like, that's dope.
VIP is Vigilantes Indoor, correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah, I do know something about Texas, baby.
Yeah, Brian. Popping in on a drum talk.
It was like, I'll go back and watch that show sometimes, and I'm like, man, like, how did we get away with that? Because, like, there was a group, like a color guard group in the 90s who did a Dante's Inferno show. And they, like, got banned from WGI or something. I was like,
wait, really?
We literally killed somebody in an electric chair. I don't know how that, like, got past the focus group, but it worked. We got, like, sixth place a year.
That's crazy.
Yeah, no, they had, like, girls being dragged by their hair, like, across the floor. It was a lot. If you've ever seen a recording,
there's, like, a fine line. WGI is like, don't do that.
Yeah. Like the I think a prop dad or like a really big kid from high school was in there. Yep. And he was like, I don't know what his role was, but he was like dragging chicks across the floor. And it was crazy.
What the heck?
That's insane.
It's wild.
Whoever was that, I guess, cast member at VIP did a pretty good job. I still remember that.
Yeah, he's a cool dude. He's like he does like some acting stuff. I think he was on the Symbol line in 2013. And then he came back to be our actor again in 2017. And I think he does a bunch of acting stuff. He's not really super present on Facebook, so I haven't been able to keep up with him. But yeah, he's a great actor. He's a crazy dude. He's pretty funny.
So he wasn't like a percussionist or anything? He was more of a,
I don't know. But I do know he was like competent enough to be on like a cymbal line. So
yeah,
he must know something about music. So,
all right. So I'm going to jump straight into like the drums and how they work kind of thing.
You got it, dude.
Okay. So, one thing that I hear all of the time, and I heard it the most, I think, from David when we would be on tour together in 2018, and he'd be like, man, that drum sounds so dry, or that drum sounds so wet. What makes, like, how do you get a difference in those? Does that come from the head? Does that come from, like, the body of the drum? What creates that kind of difference?
It's typically from the way that you tune the drums. So if you want a really dry sound, you kind of reef the drums up a little higher. If you want a wet sound, it also depends on the manufacturer, too. Like, a lot of manufacturers are more prone to getting wet sounds and dry sounds. And it's all based on preference. You could probably achieve most of the sounds you wanted to with whatever drum, as long as you're really particular about it. But, you know, obviously I'm going to say that Dynasty drums are like the best sounding drums because, you know, I worked there and I also have marched on them and I believe that. But, it's just how much, I don't know, how flexible like the drum can be or the sound range can be the way they make it. But it's all up to preference at the end of the day.
Okay.
Would you say different heads can be tuned wet or dry? Meaning like certain heads sound better more on the wet side as opposed to the dry side?
Yeah. I would say so. I honestly haven't like gone that far down that avenue yet because I'm like a bass drummer and I played bass drum for like 8 years. So I know what I hear and I hear it. And I'm like, okay, like I like that sound. I don't like that sound. And then I kind of go into like trying to break down what I like, what I don't like about that sound, and then kind of categorize it in my head of, you know, things that I think it sounds a certain way. So, it's at the end of the day, like most of the activity, you guys know, like the pageantry thing is like all based on, preference and opinions. So it's just basically like whatever you want pretty much.
Putting numbers to a non-quantifiable activity.
Dude, exactly.
Oh man. Okay. So you've played bass for your like entire marching career?
Except for like 2 seasons.
And what did you play those 2 seasons?
My 8th grade year, I made the high school indoor snare line and, that so was no, pretty
Brian
funny.
Almost just choked himself.
I've been doing it for a really long time, like a really, really long time. So that was one of them. And then when I was a junior in high school, I was like, I want to play snare drum. I want to do something different. And so I played snare drum. And then whenever I got to VIP, I played cymbals twice, my very first year. And then I think my 3rd year, I played cymbals. And then after that, I played bass drum. And then I did the winter, summer, back to back thing on bass drum, which is, yeah, it takes a toll on you, but it's fun.
What? No.
The chiropractor loves it when they pop it back. It's like,
I still have never been to a chiropractor.
Dude, I went yesterday. I feel incredible. They like popped my wrist too, dude. I like didn't even know that was a thing.
Oh gosh.
Like I was like, yeah, I got to work with my hands and stuff. And she's like, all right, like let me see your hand. Like I grabbed it and then went, like whipped my hand and then it like popped. And I was like, ooh, that feels really good.
Yeah, I should probably go see a chiropractor. I've got an incredibly long spine that I do not take care of properly. So,
Brian, can I shout out your personal Instagram?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, Brian's Instagram is at femur5days.
And that stems from just being so dang tall. In 2017, there was a day where one of the color guard captains walked up to me during lunch and was like, hey, Brian, so I don't want this to sound weird, but I just want to know, like, want you to know, sometimes I find myself getting distracted and block and just kind of staring at you because I'm trying to picture just what your skeleton looks like. And I was like, okay. She's like, yeah, you just got like, you have to have insanely long femurs, right? And I was like, I guess. And I was like, that's okay. Pretty funny. But yeah, that's so funny. That's kind of where that comes from. Ooh, okay. So bass drum for a bunch of years, cymbals and snare. When you played snare, ready? I'm going to blow your mind with how little I know. Did you play traditional or matched grip?
Oh, I'm proud of you, Brian. Nice. Good question. Yeah. Good question. We played matched grip at the high school.
Okay.
That I went to. I wasn't a huge fan of it, but. Also, I think I was like 13. I didn't have a say. I looked like a little dinosaur, like trying to play. Like my drum had to be high enough to where I didn't kick it with my like shins because I was that short, but also like had to be at like a level where I could be relaxed. Cause dude, I'm only like 5'6". Like David knows how short I am. I'm pretty short.
Yeah, Kelly's pretty short.
So it's pretty sick.
Yeah. If you put Kelly next to Brian, it's
a foot of difference.
Very hard.
Oh my God. At least a foot.
Brian, you're 6'4".
I'm 6'6", David. There's a full foot of difference between the two of us.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, my base five is like 6'5" or something like that. So me and him next to each other, it's hilarious. Beautiful. It's like my favorite pictures I have.
Like Brian, Danny I don't know DeVito if and Arnold you noticed Schwarzenegger. This. Sorry, what?
I don't know if you noticed this, but some drum corps, and this is a question I have, some drum corps have their bass drums muffled on the inside and some have them muffled on the outside. I know, at least when I marched VIP last season, we had it on the outside because it was like already there or something. But Kelly, tell us the difference, like the difference in sound and if it's just a preference or not.
Yeah, it's pretty much a preference. And it's just like based on, you know, whatever you like. Again, back to the whole opinion thing. But last year we had it on the outside and it was a really thin strip, almost like didn't do anything. So we had to like, we got the drums the day before the Dallas Regional. So that was sick. So we came in on Thursday night and I like just got finished teaching an indoor rehearsal. And then I drove over and we like took off one head and we put like a big old patch of like paper towels on the inside and we left it there for like a week or two before we had time to change our heads and do the whole inside foam thing. Which for indoor is my preference is the inside foam. It muffles it quite a bit and, you can like really hear the articulation and you need that for inside because like you're in a big jam and there's nowhere for the sound to go. So you need like as much articulation as you can, in my personal opinion. But outside we used the outside foam when I marched boss in all three summers and it was fairly new to me because in high school we used like a little bit of inside foam. But basically like the outside foam, the way they told us is that it doesn't cover up the bearing edge and the bearing edge is where the tone comes from because the head sits right on the bearing edge. And the foam doesn't cover up the bearing edge. So from the box and you're up top, it cuts through the whole ensemble, which is true. And I've experienced it. And I think that's true. But up close, it sounds like you're dribbling a basketball off concrete. It doesn't sound that great up close. And everybody's like, oh, that sounds like crap. Like, why do you guys do that? It's like, okay, well, just give us like 30 minutes and go sit up in the stands and watch our show. And then you'll understand. So it's like, we think of it as like a small price to pay, for a, a sound in the performance versus like, you're not getting judged in the lot. So like, you're not getting a score in the lot. So, you know, who cares? And it's also a different way, like a different feel, cause the head is like a single ply versus whenever you use like the Power Max or anything like that, it's more than one. So it feels different and, you know, I can't really describe it. It's a different sensation in your hand when you play it. So you have to kind of, you know, redo your technique whenever you play. But those are just the two preferences. Like some people, most of the activity does the inside foam, and drum core too. So it's just, you know, based on whatever you're like. And a lot of people have really good sounding bass drums too. So it, again, the whole activity is just based on personal preference. So yeah, that's it.
Brian's thinking really hard.
Well, no, I'm thinking about just like the experience I have around bass drums in general. That isn't high school or drum corps or percussion class in college from when I used to be a music major.
used to keyword.
We've
all been there.
God, when was that? I remember at one point I heard the phrase, I don't know if it was about Phantom or someone else, but someone once referred to a bass drum line as sounding like six shoes in a dryer. And yep. I just remember that being yep, like, is that a common thing?
No. Oh, yes, it's a common thing, but it's not a compliment.
It's a common insult.
yeah, it's a like, common insult.
Is that supposed to be like a timing thing or?
A little bit. It's like, so whenever all the players on the bass line play a note at the same time, it's called a unison. And that could be like a quarter note, a 16th note, any length of a phrase. But basically you want it, if you all play the note at the same time, the same balance, same velocity, on paper, it'll sound really clean and it'll be like really satisfying, whenever you listen to it because of all the tones you hear, like the chord and all that stuff. And you hear the note, not just the contact sound, but if somebody plays at a different time, it's literally like if you took like a couple pairs of shoes and you threw them in the dryer and it's just like boom, 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 boom. Like that's how it would sound. That's why it's basically just like, a more insulting way of saying you guys are playing dirty unisons.
Got it.
Some people say it to like lighten the mood, but other people are just like trying to be really mean. So,
okay.
You know, but I've heard it a couple times.
I guess toxicity is a strong word, but
yeah.
Drum people like to insult drum people pretty hard.
Pretty hard. It's like, and it's so weird too, because like I marched with, you know, the Boston Color Guard, and they won Color Guard twice, and they were never like, oh, that guard sucks or this guard sucks. Like they're always like super cool about like hyping up the other groups, and it didn't matter if they were in like 25th place or if they were like competing with them. They're always super nice. And same goes with like Color Guard indoor. But Color Guard drumline, or like WGI inside and drum corps drumlines, like, I don't know what it is, man. And I'm guilty of it too, like talking all this crap about other groups, because again, it's not your personal opinion. So if it's not your opinion, then it's wrong, is like how a lot of people see it. So, it's a pretty toxic environment, and I don't understand why it's like that at all. I don't know why we can't all be friends, but you know, people just think they're so much better than other people. Yeah. It is what it is. It's really weird.
It is pretty weird. So, I mean, Kelly, you deal more with drums than I, but when the Suede Maxes came out, which is a new snare head, did Boston test those out at all?
Yeah, we used those probably like 2 weeks. In 2018, we got this. We got a whole shipment, and I don't exactly remember what it was because I wasn't with the snares when they changed heads, but we got the Black Maxes like we were planning on using, and then we got the Suede Maxes, and we used those for a little bit. And we also got like a prototype kind of White Max-ish head, and that's the one we ended up using, was the prototype all summer. To this day, I still have no idea what it was or what the difference was. But we used the Suede Max for a little bit, and like if you play on them, they feel pretty good in your hands. They're not like super hard. Like if you play on the White Maxes, it's kind of like playing on like a coffee table or like a picnic table. It kind of hurts your hands, but the Suede Maxes kind of, it feels like they kind of absorb it a little bit, and it's a really dark sound, but it wasn't really the sound we were going for. We kind of needed a higher pitch. But I think they feel good in the hands. I haven't had too much exposure to those things, but, I think they sound pretty good. I think, does Chino Hills use them? I think they use those.
Maybe.
I don't even remember. Sure. I haven't kept up with them.
That head was the first time where I clearly could hear a difference up close compared to far away.
Mm-hmm.
Like up close, the Suede Maxes sound like super wet and super low most of the time.
Right.
But you go far away and it sounds super crisp and like almost the opposite. So like, yeah. Does that have more to do with the drum or is that the head or is that like air or?
You know, I'm not actually sure. I haven't gotten a chance to like get a couple brands of drums and like set them down and try to tune them all the same way and be like, okay, this sounds like this, 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 and this. I would like to do that eventually. If I ever have A, access to all those drums, or B, enough time on my hands to do that, I would like to do that. But, for the most part, I can't really tell, honestly. I don't know what it is. I would assume that it would be the heads or the way they tune them. And then maybe like the bottom head, what they use for them too, cause that would probably make a difference. But that's just like my best guess. I have no idea.
I got you. Brian, do you have anything?
Okay. So yeah, the top head versus the bottom head, like are they always, is it the same material or is it something different?
It's usually something different. So you have the top head, and on the, what is it made out of? Like, is it Kevlar? Is that what it is, David?
I think it's usually Kevlar.
I don't know what the bottom head is made of, but
this is just for snare drums.
Yeah,
this is quads just for don't drums. Use bottom heads, and bass drums. It's the same head on both sides, right?
Which side's the top head on a bass drum?
Oh my god,
hated that.
I mean, you don't have to love it.
No, yeah, I don't really know actually. I know the bottom head feels a little flimsier. And it's not going to have thinner. It's not going to have as much tension on it, than the top head does. Cause I think this is purely like my guessing, that you want the tone of the bottom head to, you want it to ring a little bit.
And in my experience, the bottom head is the one, obviously it's the one in contact with the snares. You know, there's some companies that put snares on top and bottom heads, which I've never played on or been on a line with, so I don't know that much about. Most people put them on the bottom, so like that's the head that interacts with the snare and gets that, you know,
right?
Actual snare drum sound.
And the people who do the top snare and the bottom snare, we make that at Dynasty also, and I've had a couple opportunities to like mess with it and stuff. But we were at PASIC, and a kid at a high school, we like just send his line. It was like right before PASIC, we send him his line, and I think his flight got delayed or something, so he couldn't make it to compete in PASIC. And so we just like sat him down in front of the Dynasty booth, and he played a solo. We recorded at PASIC. So it was cool. Those guys are really cool dudes, but they had top snares and bottom snares. And I watched Kevin Donka, tune it. And I was like, you know, kind of sitting there with him. Kevin Donka is like an old Blue Stars guy, and he's like a Dynasty guy. He does like Donka drums on Instagram and Facebook, and He's a really nice guy. He's like a chiropractor, super sick. But I watched him tune it, and I was like, okay, like this is very unfamiliar territory for me. And I watched him, and then I listened to it, and it's like that wet sound that we talked about. It's like you can hear a lot more snare sound than you can like the tone of the drum. So like other group, like the Bluecoats used it in like 2015, and it just gets you like a wetter sound on the top, a more snarier sound, if that's a word. So a couple groups do it. It's not super common, but it does add that little bit of, you know, diversity and sound that you can get. So some people have a thing for that, but I don't know. I haven't used it enough to know.
I just made this connection in my head. Brian, this might help you with your wet to dry comparison. In my head, at least, a wetter sound is more of a snare sound as opposed to a drier sound being more of like the tone of the head sound.
I guess it could be. I need to get like the Webster's dictionary and like look it up and like figure out what everybody means. Because people have like different ways that they say things. So,
cause there was a line, I think it was like Troopers 2016 or something like that. Like they hit their snare drums and it sounded like their snares were off all the time.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
And that to me sounded like super dry, but it also, you know, it may have been new heads. So it, you know, it could be a lot of things.
Yeah, it's hard in drum corps to like figure out like what's the best time to tune or to change heads.
Yeah.
And, you know, for snares, I feel like you can get away with it a little bit better doing it on short notice. But with bass drums, you need at least like 3 days to get it up into the zone. So we wouldn't change heads until after we knew we were going to be like either in one zone or we didn't have a show for a couple days. So we would do head changes, and like finals week, we'd do one on probably like Monday or Tuesday of finals week. And then we would do one like right after San Antonio. We did one like obviously at move-ins, but we only did a couple. You know, you don't need to do that many unless you're like blowing heads left and right, like, you know, or if it's the weather, you know, there's a lot of different variables.
If you get rained on.
Yeah, we got rained on. So we did move-ins in Vermont and it was nice, but it rains like every other day. And like, all right, you're like, yo, bag them. And you're like, oh my God. Like, I get PTSD from hearing that. So it's
for
like,
Boston? You guys did spring training in Vermont? Interesting. Yeah.
At Castleton University. And it's a pretty cool place. There's like, it's really green.
Why did you guys did it in Florida?
No, we do.
There's camps in Florida.
We do our camps in Florida. Yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah. And now they moved all the camps to Texas. They do all of them in San Antonio, like all the rehearsal camps. Yeah. So that's pretty sick. That's awesome. Of course, like the year after I age out, they're all in Texas.
So I spend like in your backyard.
Over a grand flying to and from Florida for three years. And then right after I age out, it's like, oh, we're going to do all our camps in Texas. And I could have driven, saved way more money. But, you know, it is what it is.
Fun story about a guy that you know.
Me?
And that I'm like decent Kelly. Friends with now. Wait, not you, Brian. Okay. Sorry.
Well, then don't say you and pointed a camera because it doesn't show any direction.
You know, that didn't work. I'm sorry. In 2014, was 2014 Dan's first year in Boston?
2015 was Dan. Dan Chinara. Okay,
so yeah.
Yeah, it was his
first year. So it was like November 2014 or something like that. I took a trip with a bunch of Texas people because I got a callback
to Rocket Ship.
Yeah, I took a trip in my favorite rocket ship. Thanks, Brian.
You're welcome. Just wanted to check.
with a bunch of Texas people because I got a call back for Boston. And I got there and it was me, it was Dan, and it was another guy. This is the first callback camp and like three quads showed up. And there was only one spot, so we were all fighting for one spot. And Dan ended up getting it. So that we drove the point of that story is we drove to Florida.
Oh my God.
With a 5-passenger car with 5 people in it.
Oh dude, that is awful.
I think it was like a 17-hour trip, something like that.
Yeah, 17 or 18 hours.
Dude, but that's drum corps, baby. I loved
it. It was so fun. But it was a little awkward on the way home because like, you know, I didn't get a spot and then like I think 2 other people didn't get a spot, but then
2 people did get a spot. Yeah.
Did get a spot.
Oh, yikes.
So it was a little awkward on the way home. But
so what saying, it was a party in the front seat for the 2 of them, and the other 3 in the back were like...
I think it was actually mixed up, which made it so much worse.
Oh, yeah.
But no, it was great fun. I think that was the first time I met Dan.
Yeah. Yeah, Dan is a really cool dude. Him and I are still like really, really tight. And he was one of the guys. Yeah, he was one of the guys who was like really like kind of took me under his wing whenever I first started marching Boston. And him and Chris Mason were a lot like that. So, and you know, coincidentally, those guys live in like Fort Worth and Denton. So it's pretty cool like to get to hang out with those guys outside of drum corps. Like probably one of my favorite parts.
Here's a good question for both of you. When I marched, I had the same staff. I marched Guardians 14 through 17. And like caption heads would change, but like it was always like a snare tech would become caption head or something like that. Somebody that had the same style, which is a reason why I stayed there for 4 years because I enjoyed the style and it was fun and it was I was getting a good education. Brian, I don't know, you marched 2 years, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Was it the same brass staff for both of those years?
For the majority of the 2 years, yes. There were like a couple people that changed. So in 2016 for the euphonium line, we had three techs during spring training, and then only one of them went on tour with us. And the three guys we had during spring training were Bradley Palmer, I think, and he's the trombone professor at Columbus State University, and they have like the best trombone program in the United States. Like, look them up. They're incredible if you need some good trombone music.
By the way, Kelly, Brian plays trombone.
Nice.
Matt Pedersen, who lives in Washington. He lives somewhere on the West Coast, and he's like a doctor with like 3 degrees or something like that. The man's insanely smart. One day he was like, "Do you guys have any questions at all about anything?" And I went, "Yeah, why does your skin turn red after sunburn?" And he gave me the full scientific like answer right there on the spot. He was like, "It's because of this and this and this and this and this." And I was like,
"That's pretty funny."
Incredible. And then the last guy, oh, and Matt Pedersen marched Blue Devils in the 2000s. I think he was horn sergeant and aged out in 2008. So naturally we went and found the video of finals retreat in 2008, where when they announced Blue Devils in second place, they close cut to him and you see his head roll back a little bit. Yeah. And then yes, he was teaching at Phantom 8 years later. And then Clay Wackles, I think is his last name, who... I don't think Clay was there when you were there, David. No, I think he left for Vanguard by that time.
I don't think so.
Clay marched, what are they, Madison Scouts back in the 70s. And he, or maybe it was the 80s. But when they did Malaguena, he was the euphonium soloist for that show. And if you go find that clip, that is some primo euphonium baritone playing. And Clay was the one who was with us all summer. And he was... he was an experience. Remind me to tell you the story about one of our first audition camps with Clay, because I cannot tell it on this podcast. So yeah. But for the most part, we had like techs that were tuning out. The 2 years I was there, we had the same caption head, and he kept all the same staff. Christian Carrickner, who I think last week I told the story of when he messaged me on Facebook and was like, "Hey, don't get yourself cut. Actually go practice." And I was like, "Yeah, okay." But yeah, I don't think we had too many big changes.
So would you say this, how would you say the style from one brass person to another changes? And does it change? Like, is good tone just good tone?
I think the way it changes is that like the approach to how you get there is what's different. So like, I know, I think like, if I'm thinking about this properly, from, the way Christian taught everything in 16 and 17 was like, we will get the tone right, and then we will push up the volume, versus, Brad, who's the guy who's there now. I think his approach was like, let's get the volume and then refine the tone. And so that's kind of like just where you end up at. And so Brad was very like, 'cause they were playing like, David, you remember this. They were like pretty loud in 2018 in spring training. You're like awesome. In the dorms, yeah. You'd be like, "Oh, there's the horn line." But in yeah, like 2016 and 2017, we were kind of like, "Okay, we want to sound super good first, and then we'll worry about pushing the volume." And so like there were days where we'd be in the middle of a tour and Christian would be like, "All right, guys, today we're pushing volume." And we'd be like, "Okay." And we would literally go like to a backfield away from the school, and we would just start like playing louder, and he'd be like, "All right, cool. And that was loud. Now let's do it again. And we'll go to like the next dynamic," and we would just keep going. And those days were like brutal on your chops, but also felt really good for some reason. 'Cause you'd get to the end and you're like, "My face is just like thoroughly destroyed." And he'd be like, "All right. And now you don't have to play again until ensemble." We're like, "Oh, cool."
So would you say those two approaches are just preference?
I think so. I think it's a preference of like the design staff and as well as like the teaching staff and who wants to be there. 'Cause like I don't want to say none. For the most part, the majority of the brass staff that I can think of from when I marched in 17 to when they switched caption heads in 18, like entirely switched. When Christian left in 2017 or at the end of the season, like everybody from there went to Vanguard or somewhere else and taught somewhere. I think like 3 or 4 of them went to go teach at Santa Clara, for 2018. But like Brad came in with an entirely new just brass staff that he brought with him.
That's cool. Because and now I'm going to kind of ask the same question to Kelly. I mean, obviously I know the answer because, you know, I'm a teacher and mm-hmm. I'm a percussionist. So I know like you ask every single person and they will have a different use for your index finger. It's like
the amount of
detail. And I know Kelly, did you march a year at Boston before Colin McNutt got there?
No, I marched the first year he was there.
So your first year. Okay. But you know a little bit about how the teaching was with the previous guy, right?
Yeah. I think Elsh taught a little more of the North Texas style. As far as like what I've heard from like Dan and Ben and Brian and, or Chris rather, Dan. And then another guy named Steve. Yeah. Moody is also another guy. Like a lot of the vets from 2016 and even 2014, 15.
So tell me about, I guess, what you've heard from them about that switch, because in my head, at least, those are like completely different techniques. That,
yeah,
like technique with hand, technique with sound quality.
Yeah, it's a lot of the same. A lot of people get it like confused, and it kind of frustrates me sometimes when people are like, oh, you guys just like squeeze and like hit the crap out of the drum. It's like, okay, we don't squeeze, but yes, we hit the crap out of the drum. A lot of the way they teach is arm, wrist, and finger is the way that they teach us. So like when we play basic strokes, you use arm, wrist, finger, and then to get the low notes out, right? And you don't want to like, is the way that they teach a lot of that stuff for us, at least. Same thing with the bass drum, and it's a little different. The arm, wrist, and finger is like the big, like the umbrella idea, and then like, each subsection has their own interpretation of that, but it all like stems back to that same idea. And I don't honestly know a lot about the North Texas way, the way they break it down to that nth degree. I know they play with relaxed hands, like no tension whatsoever in your arms, which is the way you want to do it because that's the way you get the most relaxed sound. But I think a lot of it stems from the wrist. This is me purely on assumption from what I see. But for us, it was like, don't be afraid to get out of your comfort zone while playing as far as like the heights go and stuff like that. And the way that Colin writes, he writes his books pretty loud. So like our most common used, like the quietest we ever got was like a triple piano. And we're just like, okay, all right. And then the loudest we got, I think I had one time in 2017, it was 7 Fs, like 7 fortes. And it was at the end of our closer. And I was like, all right, yeah, I can do that, whatever. And that's just like play as loud as you can. It was pretty much the same thing. And so like a lot of the time we don't really work on balance and blend and stuff like that. As far as the baseline goes, it's like, honestly, like it's going to sound kind of ridiculous, but they would talk a lot about, like if we all play loud, it'll all bounce together. And then we'll kind of like form that sound around each other. So like one person is going to play like loud, or like the section leader would play like whatever the dynamic would be. And they use a lot of the inches system, and other people can go back and forth and like, sound's not a number, and like, okay, but you can interpret it different ways. It's like, you know, there's more than like 9 ways to skin a cat. So it's like, they would do that like a different way with the dynamics. And a lot of people like didn't like that. Or I would come home and I would tell people, you know, I'd try to explain to them the process that we did. And they're like, oh, that's just dumb. Like, that's dumb. Why do you guys do that? And I'm like, okay, well, we still did pretty well, so.
Yeah.
But for the most part, we had the same teachers all 3 years. We had the same staff. But in comparison to, it was vastly different. Going back to your question, it was vastly different from what Ellis did whenever he was there versus, you know, what Colin was doing. They both tried to strive for perfection. I know, like, everybody tries to do that. So, like, they had that that common ground. But, it's just, you know, you've seen Colin McNutt's lines win Fred's before, like, you know, so it's like he knows a way to get good. But the way that we got to getting perfect was the way that we would have to like work our butts off for it. Like we would have to like grind every single day. And other people are like, yeah, we'll just like relax, make sure everybody's comfy, and we'll play. And they win, and like they're clean, and like they do it that way. And so it's just like different avenues trying to get to the same common goal.
Yeah. Dude, it's crazy how much different every single teacher is as a percussionist. Like I've had to form my own opinion on like what I think is the most. I like teaching efficiency, and like if it's not efficient, then like if it can be done with less energy and still be like a productive sound, then you know that's what's important to me. But like it's just crazy. Literally, you go into a lot like before a show, and every single drum line is doing everything differently. It's
weird. Yeah.
There's a slight divide between like the whole East and West quote, sorry, air quotes, East Coast and West Coast type of drumming. And now people are saying there's like a Gulf Coast type of drumming, which is like the Texas thing.
But the South Texas coast. Yeah.
Yeah. But dude, it's crazy. Cause like, you know, when I was learning instruments, I just graduated from college with a music education degree. When I was in college and I had to learn all the instruments, it was just like, this is a good tone. This is not a good tone. This is how you get a good tone. And I'm like, but what defines a good tone? And I'm like asking all these percussion questions. But it's interesting to ask the same question from a horn to a percussionist.
So real quick, I want to jump back to what you said at the beginning of that about like the way you play. And so you said it's usually like arm, wrist, finger, right? And so is that why percussionists are always called the big dogs? Because they go arf, arf. For everyone who can't see, I just did two drum hits and I went arf, arf.
I hated that.
I hate that.
I think it's cool that you said that because
you know you love it somewhere deep down.
I'm laughing at it. That doesn't mean I love it.
Somewhere deep down.
That's what I was going to say.
you're gonna bring it up in some meeting somewhere. You're going to be like, huh, that was kind of funny. Maybe not today. Maybe it's gonna not be, tomorrow.
Brian, you're really good at those jokes that you think of in 2 weeks and you're like, oh, that was clever.
Yeah. And you'll look back at this when it comes out in 2 weeks and you'll be like, dang, that was actually really smart.
All right. So real quick before we wrap this up, Brian, do you have any questions about like drums or how they're made or anything percussion related for Kelly?
Nothing percussion related. I just was going to ask, what was your favorite year that you got to march or like favorite show you got to participate in?
Probably 2018 at Boston. That was probably like one of the cleanest lines I've been on. And also like one of the hardest shows I've ever marched in my life. But that's what made it fun for me. Cause I like working really hard. So like that was really fun for me. And the show is really cool. Like the ending of the show is like, it's like hard to find shows that you're like, you like it the whole way through. And then the closer's like, okay, that made sense. A lot of the times it's like, well, you can tell they worked on the closer last because it's like kind of not the same idea. But, I felt like that show, like as a whole piece together is like very unique and playing Rim of Spiritual, like running my butt off in the middle of the drum feature. Yeah. It was super fun. Like I get memed sometimes about that, like in rehearsal, but I always laugh at it. I think it's so funny, but I also think it's like so unique and so cool.
Yeah, that was a long drum break, dude.
Dude, you're telling me.
Like how you probably know, but like it was at least, I want to say it was close to a minute or longer.
Dude, probably almost 2 minutes, I would say.
Oh my gosh.
But dude, it was crazy. And it was like 2:04 the whole time. And so sometimes like it would the tempo would sag a little bit. So they would like start the reps at like 2:06. And they're like, yeah.
Brian knows those fast tempos at 2017
Phantom, baby. Man. Third movement, 2:16 from step off to close.
Gosh.
Good Lord. Yeah, that's insane. All right.
Well, the last thing we're going to do is we're going to kind of go around the table and we're going to do our little 2, 4, 6, 8, something that we've appreciated, recently. We're still in this weird, weird times. Right, yeah. Brian?
Always.
I'm going to steal the one that Brian's probably going to say right off the bat. Actually, no, I'll give credit to Brian, but, there's a podcast that Brian showed me, I want to say about a week ago. It's called The Teacher's Lounge. It's
Big Grande's Teacher's Lounge.
And usually,
it's so funny.
It's usually four hosts and a guest most of the time. And it's fake teachers at a fake school and everything is improvised. The entire hour-long podcast is improvised. And it's like the funniest thing I've heard. And it like, I just like, I can't stop listening because it's so funny. It's just, most of the time, the word I can think of is just ridiculous. Yep. Like they talk about how, like, I can't think of a good example, but like, they talk about how this guy like drinks paint.
Yep. Paint drinking, the driver's ed teacher can't legally drive, stuff like that. Yeah. And it's just, if you want like it's a so good funny. Hour of comedy that'll leave you in tears, the Big Grande's Teacher's Lounge. Like, I've been listening to it at work, like one headphone yeah. in, behind my mask, walking through the hospital, having to like stop and chuckle ear to ear just to myself, and everyone looks at me like I'm a little crazy, and I'm like, yeah, but hey, who's not? So
it's one of those things that these guys, like, it's completely improvised, so sometimes the whole group just pauses for 5 or 10 seconds and because they're dying laughing. And I'm a fan of that kind of comedy because, like, if you're like really dry on stage or like on air or whatever, like, it's not that funny. But like when you say something stupid enough to make everybody laugh and like break character, basically, it makes it so much better.
Yeah, that's a very fun show. I think for myself, I recently discovered a photographer on Instagram who I just like absolutely love their work. And I will not even attempt to like pronounce the name because they're from Israel, but I will spell it for you if you want to look it up. And it's YAEL space GR or underscore GRIPICH. So I don't know how to spell that, but they do like some incredible fashion work.
We'll put that
in the thing. Description. Cool, cool, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just do like really, really cool stuff. And I've been like following their page and just kind of been like, this is cool. I like that. How can I draw inspiration from it for like the last couple days? So.
Real quick, check in. Brian, how's your new hobby of developing film going?
Oh my gosh. It's like so, it's so satisfying to be like, oh, sorry, I can't do something. I got to go develop film. And then just like turn your phone off and go lock yourself in a dark room. Well, not dark room, but like, and then just get to like, I've also recently binge watched all of Community. So when I was like developing film,
nice. Yeah,
I saw it for the first time and I literally would just like go in, set like a screen up with Community on. And then I would sit there and just like have a timer going as I was developing film in my bathroom, in my bathtub. It's a very hands-on nice. Process. That's super cool.
Is your mom ever concerned that you've locked yourself in a dark bathroom?
She hasn't said. She's kind of a weird thing. So
that's good. That's good.
Know.
All right, Kelly. What's something that you've discovered recently, or something that you appreciate?
Dude, I started playing Xbox again. It's been like a couple months, and it's a good way to just kind of blow off some steam. I don't know, like, I still get to hang out, like, virtually hang out, in air quotes, with the dudes that I marched with during the summer, like, most of the baseline that I marched with, and we all play Call of Duty pretty much, like, religiously now, and a dude that lives with me, his name is John Conrado, and he's, like, one of my best friends at VIP in 2019, and, he lives at my house, and we play Call of Duty all the time, like, if, we'll play, like, Warzone, and, like, if one of us dies or one of us does something stupid, we'll go into the other room and, like, yell at him. Like, because our rooms are right next to each other. It's just something stupid. but something, like, to just, like, you know, it's a really weird and stressful time. So it's good to kind of just, like, relax and kind of just shut everything off and have some fun with some people. Even though, like, the game does make me mad sometimes. But it's fun, dude. Like, it's a lot of fun.
David.
Hey, you know, my rage days are over, okay? I haven't broken a controller in like over a month, okay?
Do you have like a sign that says days without accident?
Yeah,
days without broken controller.
dude, I think it's cool, and I don't think like video games and like social gaming with friends gets enough credit because like honestly, that's the only way me and Brian stay connected, you know, like I like, we text every day and all that stuff, but like, he lives in Georgia, I live in Texas, like there's no way. And like, you know, we connected so well over the summer. I was like, dude, I like want to continue a friendship with this person, and like,
right,
cool, he's got an Xbox, let's play like as much as possible, just to that. Keep things going. Yeah. And it's great, because like random friends from high school will be like, hey, you want to play Call of Duty? And I'm like, sure, dude, I haven't talked to you in 7 years.
Yeah, always.
It's awesome.
It's been cool. I've been able to keep up with a lot of people that I marched with that live in like Kansas or like California or like Alabama or wherever. And I'm like, yeah, dude, we can still like kind of hang out almost. Yeah. Almost.
And even especially now that we can't be actually social.
Yeah, to do anything else. Yeah. So I've just been like, just at home, just chilling, playing Xbox. It's a really big waste of time, but it's something that is fun to me. So like, yeah, there's a trade off.
Yeah, it's all that matters. Yeah. All right. Well, Kelly, thank you for answering all those questions.
Absolutely. Brian, thank you for having me.
Thank you for having wonderful questions.
Oh, who little old me? I'm just a rat, Southern Peach.
This will be episode 5.
Look for it in 2 weeks, baby. Which doesn't make sense to say that, because if someone's listening to it, they're actively looking at it. But you know what? Hey.
Luckily, we don't say the date in our podcast.
Who's worried about through lines of continuity? Not me.
Nobody. All right.
Cool. Kelly, you have anything you want to plug real quick before we end this?
I'd like to plug Bang, because we haven't done that today. We usually plug Bang Energy. Kelly is also a great fan of Bang.
I'm a bangster for sure. Bangster for life. You know what I'm saying? Dude, I love the Bang Energy drinks. Like, no shame at all. Like, those things are sick.
I introduced Brian to Bang.
Probably. Yeah, he did. He actually did at VIP. It's probably like the worst thing I've ever done for my heart. But it's like the greatest thing I've ever done for my, productivity. So
dude, I feel that the other day at work, this is maybe 2-3 weeks ago now. I was on my way to work. I had not slept well the night before. So I stopped at the gas station and picked up a Bang, and then I had it, and I made the mistake of drinking it all like in my 30-minute lunch break. But then work isn't like working out. And so I was like, oh, I'll be fine. It'll just be like caffeine in my system. And then I think maybe 30 to 45 minutes later, I was like, my heart rate is 120 right now.
Yeah.
I was like, it'll do that. Cause it was just like, my body was juicing, and I was like, I have no way to burn this energy. And if I start running through the halls of a hospital, security is going to get real mad. So yeah. David introduced me to Bang.
Also, follow Dynasty Drums and Titan Field Frames on social media. We post a lot of content. Every Friday, we post a feature Friday. And then I think once a month, we're doing like an artist education series. And I think our next one is Matt Penland. Our first one was Jeff Ozdemore. And that was really, it was an online,
online teaching actually.
Thing. Yeah, Jeff is a really smart dude. And so is Matt. Mm-hmm. And Matt's going to do like a composition thing, I think.
Sweet.
So be on the lookout for those things. And then follow us. We post a lot of really cool finishes that we do. And for any inquiries, just hit up your local music retailer, if you're interested in getting a quote on a Dynasty Drumline. But yeah, if anybody has any questions, feel free to message me on Facebook or Instagram, or I think I still use my Twitter sometimes.
I'll go ahead and put Dynasty stuff and your personal stuff, if that's okay, in the cool. description.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that
works. Okay.
Sweet.
Cool, man. Thanks for being on. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, man.
On that note, bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.